Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Ben Yendel joins me again on the show today to conclude our discussion of the Star Wars RPG system by Fantasy Flight Games. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 27 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. So as promised last week, we are continuing the interview that I had with Ben Yendel. And Ben is from the Tales from the Hydian Way podcast. He's one of the two hosts of that show. And if you are digging what you're hearing about the Star Wars games in these interviews, definitely go check out Ben's podcast. You can learn a lot about the game. It's also a really great just general podcast for GMs of role-playing games. Ben and the other host, Cam, talk a lot about just how to be a good GM and how to accomplish various things. Very similar in that way to this show, and I really enjoy it. So I highly recommend you go check that out. So without further ado, here's Ben. So one thing that we haven't talked about yet that's one of the major parts of the system that I really liked as a GM, at least, I haven't played yet, is the Destiny mechanic. So can you tell us kind of how that works?
The Destiny mechanic is sort of, if you want to get into the high concept of it, it's the flow back and forth of the force between the player group, who is ostensibly the light side, and the GM, who's ostensibly the dark side.
I love it.
And you can do so many things with flipping over a Destiny point. The simplest one is upgrading a skill check from a ability dice to a proficiency dice, where you've got the chance of getting a triumph or getting a couple extra advantage. Or say you've got your roll already being full of proficiency dice. Well, you can get another ability dice on top.
Cool.
Or you've got things where, kind of like a fate point of, I forgot this. Well, I'm flipping a destiny point. No, I didn't forget this. So, like, critically remembering something. And it's sort of a back and forth between the players and the GM that, because it's so easy to use, it shows up in almost every role. It's not something that you're hoarding. Like, even in the smallest game that I've played, it's not something that we're hoarding.
Okay.
And the way it's generated is there's a specific force die that has white and black pips on it, and whatever each player rolls, that's how many points go into the pool.
Okay.
So you've got three players. You've got anywhere between 3 and 6 pips possible, and that's what your pool is going to be. So it can be this really tiny constrained thing where if one side forgets about it, it can almost take it completely out of the game. Or you can have this fairly large one where it's just flowing back and forth and becoming even more epic to it.
And the GM uses those as well.
Right. Yeah, if the GM uses it, it's flipping from a dark side to a light side, and the difficulty is getting upgraded, or something positive's happening for the NPCs. Like, anything that the players can use it for, the GM can also use it for. Like, one of the things can be that if the players haven't remembered a piece of equipment and they're starting to debate, the GM can flip their point saying, well, no, you did forget it back on the ship. And now the players have to deal with that. In some ways, it's whoever gets there first. But also, I guess I've just been blessed with the groups that I've had. And it's been a very fun back and forth between the people playing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a trade-off, because like that example, if the GM says, oh, no, you forgot the thing, and he flips the point, well, now they have to deal with that. But they also have another light side point that they can use later to help them out.
Exactly. It's not zero sum. Like, if a GM spends a point the player group gets a point. If the players spend a point, the GM gets a point.
Yeah.
I've rarely found a group spending its last point until the very end of the session, but there's always reasons to be moving it. Because if you're giving them points, they're going to be giving you back points.
Right, right. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's sort of this extra storytelling aspect to it. It's not quite, say, an inspiration or a plot point from D&D. Mm-hmm. It's something much more baked into the system.
Right. Yeah, I really like the back and forth part of it. And as a GM, I really enjoyed it. How do you like it from like a player's perspective? Is it pretty nice?
Yeah, from a player's perspective, it's been pretty fun because it's, okay, this is a critical role that I'm needing to be doing. Okay, I'm going to flip that point. I'm looking for anything that I can get the GM to agree that I get a boost die from and creating as big of a pool as I can. Some of the pools that I've had have almost been falling out of my hands from having so many dice. Just from doing stuff that is so difficult, but also my character is skillful and having all these bonuses and setbacks to it. Like, I've essentially done a trench run once where I've got this hotshot pilot that's barreling down a street between a bunch of high-rises, needing to blow up this generator at the end of the block. From that, because it is so tight of a location, I've got a couple setback dice, but because I'm flying in this really skookum ship, I've got a bunch of boost die from it. So I've got these, I think at the time I had maybe 12, 13 dice that I had to roll all at nice. Once. And thankfully I succeeded, but it was a really, it was one of those rolls where it was either I succeed or I pancake, and both of them would have been just fine. And it's, yeah, it lends itself to doing the more epic end of things.
Yeah, one thing I really liked from my experience with it was it's very, like, you can't really predict what's going to happen, because even if you have a lot of dice to do the thing you want to do, the different sides have different amounts of success or not. So you could have tons of dice and still fail, or something really interesting could happen.
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's like, I could roll those, say, 7 positive dice, and every single one of them comes up as advantage. So it doesn't matter what the bad dice come up as, I don't succeed.
Right.
Because you have to have one surviving success to succeed. Even if everything cancels, you fail.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, you can have something that's amazingly beneficial that isn't the thing you were wanting to do. So it turns into a story that is so unpredictable because of that. And it becomes a very freeing thing for the GM, I've found. Like, when you get your head around it, it becomes something that you have to deal with the unexpected. It isn't just, well, they missed on this roll and I can keep the story going this way. It's, they missed on the primary thing, but then they've come up with this really cool idea of a side quest from this, all this advantage.
Yeah.
So we're going to go off and do this. I have no notes on this. I just came up with an idea for it. And yeah, we're going down this path.
That's awesome. So how does character advancement work in the game? Like, how does your character advance or grow?
As you're saying, it's kind of a point buy.
Okay.
When you're doing creation, you've got the attributes for the species. And then at character creation, you can buy better attributes. But then you've got skills and talents, which as you are going along, you can increase down a talent tree or improve your skill ranks. And with both of these, it costs experience. At the end of a session, depending on how your GM's wanting to do it, it can be based on an hourly. You've shown up for 3 hours, so you're getting 15 experience, or just a per session thing.
Okay.
And the experience being doled out is somewhere between 10 and 20 experience for a session, unless it's a really long session. And in some cases, for a epically long session, like an 8-hour session, you're breaking halfway through anyway.
Right.
Just for food and whatnot. So here's 20. And with that, you're spending on increasing skills or going down the talent trees to get the cooler and cooler things.
Yeah, I really liked the talent trees. And They're somewhat kind of like in like an MMO or a, like an RPG on a video game.
Yeah, they're pretty well planned out. In some cases, surprisingly well planned out. And they're getting better at doing them. So they're becoming more flavorful just from the raw talents to them. But even in just the core book themselves, there's so many different things that you can do. Like, there isn't a talent tree that just says, you shall go off and do this. It's got a couple different ideas behind how you can use a talent tree.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of different paths.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just finding two paths in a talent tree, you're not looking hard enough. There are very few ones where it's a singular path to go through. Like, you're finding different things. And even though you're going into a talent tree, you can then buy another specialization and cross-specialize.
Oh, very cool.
So, say you're a pilot. Then you can buy the specialization that's a driver, that's complementary. Some of the talents can only ever be bought once, but some of them stack. So you're removing extra setback dice, or you're getting extra bonus dice for having these ranks of a talent. And with that, you can plot out a character vastly far into the future if you're so wanting to.
Yeah, I was looking through the book and thinking about character concepts, and it really seemed like a pretty deep rabbit hole you could go down just thinking, well, when I get this, I'll get that, and then I'll get that, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that.
Well, and then there's complementary specializations that are in completely unrelated careers. Like, you can have a gadgeteer bounty hunter that then takes the technician outlaw tech talent tree as well. And they're complementary as all heck, but they're almost to two different purposes. Or you could then go into the hired gun and pick a marauder, which is a very melee-focused talent tree.
Okay.
And you can really customize and follow your character concept to much deeper levels, whether you're wanting to be a generalist or whether you're wanting to become a specialist down a particular rabbit hole.
And then as a GM, instead of like having levels of characters when you're thinking about designing an adventure or whatever, instead it's based on how much experience they have or they've spent, right? As far as like balancing.
Balancing is a bit more wishy-washy.
Okay.
I've been finding. Because, well, I've had three stormtrooper squads and a stormtrooper sergeant have a really tough challenge just because of the talents they were utilizing and the tactics they were using in a combat against a very experienced crew.
Okay.
That if in a different situation, this crew would just completely mop the floor with these. And it's very much in how you're using them. Like, I guess sort of the GM's ace in the hole is minging groups. Because as you're using minging groups, they start off with just attributes, and the more bodies you throw at the minging group, it becomes more and more skilled. Because, yeah, a single stormtrooper is fairly useless at shooting at people. But if you put enough volume of blaster fire in a general direction, it will hit something. One person at some point in the round will hit something.
Yeah.
If you get enough of them together, they become pretty dangerous. So it only takes maybe one or two encounters where you can then adjust up.
Okay.
And there are other levels of, like, from a GM, you've got minions, you've got rivals, which are individuals that have talents that you can use.
Okay.
And then you've got nemesis level characters, which they've got automatic upgrades to combat against them. Or they've got social equivalent to that, where if you're trying to do deals with them, you're upgrading your difficulty no matter what. So it becomes automatically harder for them to deal with.
Cool.
And even just in the Edge of the Empire core book, you've got a wide swath of the criminal underbelly that you're running up against, and a nice smattering of the Imperials as well.
Awesome. That's really cool.
As I say, it's a little more wishy-washy because you start getting into larger and larger groups that you're having to ostensibly deal with.
Okay.
But if you have, say, a minging group of six people, you're still only rolling once.
Okay.
or if your party's going up against three minging groups of four, I'm only rolling three times, and I'm not overwhelming them with 12 different initiative slots.
Right.
Like, it's sort of an instant swarm rule for it, just with the way that they're working.
Gotcha.
And you can sort of calibrate your swarms based on what the players are doing and how effective they are. And also, once you start getting a feel for the system, it's really surprisingly easy to come up with NPCs on the fly.
Oh, cool.
Whether they're rivals or nemesis-level characters. Almost more so than anything else I've seen, it's, yeah, this character should have about this much for a skill that you're rolling against. Like, you're going up against a computer hacker that's really good at their job, and it's an opposed check. Well, because it's an opposed check, you're going up against three challenge dice, the red polyhedrals, and one of the purple difficulty dice. And that's a fairly bad check to be rolling against, but it's also fairly fair, and it's easier than going up against Lobot.
Cool.
Which, one of the two adventures that they've got out for Edge of the Empire does take place on Cloud City.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And it's very much a, you know, they like saying it's an Ocean's 11 one, but if you've ever brushed up against the TV show Leverage, it has more in common with that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it would sort of be like a Leverage two-parter. That would be the rough equivalent of it.
So have you had any experience as a GM or player with the published adventures?
I've run the first one, which is actually a pretty good one to just dissect.
Okay.
And like, it's a relatively linear one that you start here, you go through this stuff in this section, act ends. Go through this one where it's, again, fairly linear and really cool things happening. You've got Nexu flying out of places. You've got arboreal octopuses falling on people. It's awesome. And then you get to a junk planet where you're flying through canyons of junk that are disintegrating around you. The story behind it is pretty epic, and just sort of the way that it expands slowly on getting your footing with the system, it's also pretty good for that.
Oh, cool. That's actually, I have that one. I bought that one, and next time I get a chance to run the game, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it's also a pretty good one for customization. The Jewel of Yavin, which was the second one to come out, It's a lot less linear. So it's really good at getting a flavor for Cloud City. It's almost its own Cloud City source book.
Cool.
And it's sort of, this is Cloud City over 5 days. And your players can do any of the stuff that we've presented here. There is a relatively thin go do this, then this, then this to it. But The amount of stuff that they can do is either side or preparation is fantastical.
Awesome.
And even the Age of Rebellion one is pretty good for what it is wanting to do. It's got a very good defend the base scenario at the start.
Okay.
Then set up a base because you've evacuated, because they're sending in a lot of troops. It's not quite defending Hoth, but it's pretty close. And so you're evacuating, then you're setting up the new base on a new planet and trying to get supplies because you had to leave all the other ones behind.
Right.
And having to deal with an extra almost subplot going on throughout the entire adventure, which kind of turns into the main plot, but at least at the beginning it works really well as a subplot. Like, it's, all three of them are pretty well put together adventures. The one that's coming out for Force and Destiny that just got announced in the last month or so looks to be even more interesting, because this is the first one where they're opening up to the Jedi and looking at the stuff that went on during the Clone Wars.
Oh, cool. Now, do you know the Force and Destiny, is that taking place in the same time period as the other two games?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
It's like, this is a time period that got chosen apparently about 5 years ago now.
Okay.
And that's the one that they're aiming for. So from a lore standpoint, they're taking a very, to say big universe view of things is almost an understatement, because you can get four Jedi characters together and they still have trillions upon trillions upon trillions of other beings out there where it's just four people.
Yeah.
So you could have go another way with it, you could have four Chiss, which are supposed to be this little insular species that is in its own little acorn in the unknown regions that no one ever sees. You could still have a adventuring party of these people that, it's weird, and everyone should sort of treat them that it's weird, but there's nothing really against it.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I don't really know much about it. I was assuming it was going to be later, like the Jedi Academy days or whatever. So that'll be interesting.
There's also the other aspect to it that until about a year ago, no one really, 3 years ago or so, they wiped out the expanded universe.
Yeah, that's true.
So at that point, they were just getting Edge of the Empire to print. Well, they were just starting to run the beta. Then all this stuff that has come since, it's been walking this fine line between.
Okay.
And you can start seeing the, all of them go to Lucasfilm to get their lore vetted. So most of this stuff does get seen by, in some cases, even the story group gets to have a veto on it. And it may not be completely 100%. If it's in the Star Wars role-playing system, it's canon, but it's stuff that has at least been vetted to make sure that it doesn't directly step on toes.
Okay.
Or they've done their best to make sure that they don't step on toes with it.
Cool. So, do you know, are they trying to base it on canon stuff and avoiding the EU now, or?
I don't know for certain.
Okay.
I can, some of the stuff that they, a great example of one of the things that just showed up is one of the things that they've had from, they've released on the X-Wing Minis line, which was from the wonderful, in some cases, wonderful old Star Wars MMO of Galaxies, Jump to Lightspeed.
Uh-huh.
Decimator, which is great for the X-Wing Minis game, but it just showed up in the Smuggler Splat book with stats, because that would be a ranging patrol ship. It makes sense for it to show up there.
Okay, yeah.
And, these guys, the writers do try and pull from everywhere that they can, and they'll try and get in as much new stuff as they can, and they'll also try and bring back all their old favorites. But it does have to go through Lucasfilm to get approved, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to say, about the time that I was first getting into Edge of the Empire and really, wanting to run it more, Star Wars Rebels came out. And that seemed like a great resource for some lore.
Oh, it is. Well, in some ways, it's been turning a lot of people's ideas of what Star Wars was, at least from the EU standpoint, on its head, which has been great.
Yeah.
Because it's showing that there is so much fresh soil to plant seeds in. Like, if you're wanting to do something in Star Wars, you can do it. And it can be as epic as you want.
Yeah.
And it can grow to be as epic as you want. Because who would have thought Darth Vader showing up at the end of the first season?
Yeah.
And they go from there.
Yeah. And that's canon now, right? I think?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that is put out from the fiction end of things, like, what is it, Star Wars Insiders, showing on TV, including the Clone Wars TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the movies that are released in theaters are canon. So you've got the Big Six, you've got the Clone Wars pseudo-pilot, the Clone Wars TV show, and Rebels.
Yeah.
And the books that have come out inside the last year, starting with A New Dawn.
Yeah, very cool.
It's been, to be a Star Wars fan, it's a pretty exciting time, especially with the movie coming out.
Yeah, especially come December.
Well, with the movie coming out, which is looking interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing that was shown at Celebration on, I think it was a Saturday, it could have been the Sunday, of Rogue One, which they're not even allowed to advertise outside of anywhere until August because of some Mission Impossible movie. It's a ragtag band of rebels. They're talking like based on Zero Dark Thirty and Band of Brothers style of mentality for a movie.
Cool.
Where they're trying to get the plans for the Death Star.
Oh, nice.
Like sort of a movie that butts up against Episode 4, where it transmits off to a Krillian corvette, and that's the one that Princess Leia's on going to Tatooine. Like, that's what, at least that's what it's seeming like.
Okay, cool.
and it's supposed to be a very military style tone to it, as opposed to this much more freeform, almost role-playing party standpoint.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It is. It is like an RPG group.
Yeah, and yeah, with Rebels, it totally is an RPG group. seeing the producers on Twitter just sort of go giddy with it.
Yeah.
And you see a new episode come out, and they're almost dissecting it for the fun things that you can come up with for their own games. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I was very happy when Ahsoka Tano showed up at the end of season one.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially seeing her against Vader, which they've been at least teasing in the trip or in the posters.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see what they do with that, because that could go so dark so fast, beyond what I think they would do, but...
Well, okay, I don't really know. Star Wars actually is a very dark thing when you start peeling off the initial layer to it. And what they did in the Clone Wars show was some of the darkest things I've seen on TV.
Yeah.
Like, even in first season of Rebels, you're using the corpse of a dead Jedi to lure in players or lure in the party.
Yeah.
So that's pretty dark. Then you've got Vader being full-out Vader.
Like, yep.
Absolute, complete evil Vader.
I love it.
Like, murder a schoolroom of kids Vader.
Yep. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him and Ahsoka square off. And
yeah, it's looking to be a very interesting season coming up. And from a lore standpoint, Star Wars is looking to be really, really fun.
Yeah, I agree. Another aspect of the game that is a big part of Star Wars is the space combat. And I had a little fun with this just with the beginner box adventure. And I really liked what I saw of it, having the players crewing a YT-1300 and the different roles that they could do on the ship. And they quickly found out that they were, I think we were one player less than what we really needed. They couldn't man both the guns or something.
Yeah. The beginner box runs really well off of four people. If you're running it at three, you kind of have to adjust, but it's okay. If you're running it at two, then you really got to start looking at things.
Yeah.
But
give them a couple X-Wings instead.
Something like that. Or have one of the other people showing up as an NPC or something along that lines. But it's, yeah. The space combat is a pretty fun thing. In some ways, it's even more brutally deadly than normal combat.
Yeah.
Because if you're in a starfighter, it evaporates.
Oh.
Like, TIE fighters are one, maybe two hits.
Yep. As they should be.
Well, exactly. You don't really see them taking a huge amount of hits in the movies and shrugging it off.
Right.
X-Wings,
right.
Again, they take a couple hits and then they go boom, just like in the movies. And once you start getting up into the freighters like the YT-1300, they're more robust. And you can start doing really impressive things that are really just sort of what your players are imagining is happening. It's more story-based. Yes, there are mechanics, and they are different than the base stuff that everyone's learned, but they aren't that different. Like, it's all based on the normal on-the-ground stuff.
Right, yeah.
Damage is on a different scale. Range bands are vastly increased in size. And some of the other things that can happen can get a little confusing, like having to accelerate the ship and then actually move the ship as something else during the turn. It can get to be a little much, and to learn that aspect, which is the reason why in the beginner games it comes at the very end.
Right.
Because you've got this experience and then adding more onto it.
Yeah.
And it's fun, and when you get a hold of it, it can be even more fun than almost anything else.
Yeah.
Like, seeing some of the things, like one of the things that showed up in the, it was in the Ace Splat book, was terrain tables.
Okay.
And what the terrain tables are there for is, they're essentially suggestions to use for advantage and triumph, despair and threat.
Okay.
Because succeeding, hey, look, I've succeeded at piloting. Well, I'm going through this crazy asteroid field. what's going on around me.
Right.
Okay, I've rolled 3 threat. That means I'm bouncing off of this asteroid and taking some damage to my ship and rolling on the ship critical table. Like, it can be something pretty nasty.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff is really, in some ways, it's sort of fluff, but it helps give ideas for what to do in these situations.
Yeah. One thing I thought was really cool is you mentioned how in the personal, like, character combat, how you have your physical damage and then your kind of mental damage, your strain. Mm-hmm. And they have that with the starships too, where you have, like, where you're taking actual damage to your hull. And then you have, I think it's called system strain.
Yep.
Where you could, maybe you do some crazy maneuver and you pull it off, but it strains the systems of your ship a bit. So it doesn't actually do physical damage, but it could cause complications later on with your various systems. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And when your mechanic is running around trying to fix everything, it's that system strain that they're trying to get back, because the pilot's always trying to use it.
Right.
They're always trying to do a couple actions during the round, so you're stressing the ship out. Plus, if they ever roll any threat, that can be applied against the ship as well. So you're chewing through strain, and then you've got a character trying to return it. So you've kind of got this little battle going on at the table, just trying to keep the ship alive.
Yeah.
And especially as a GM, you're saying, okay, you just did this barrel roll. Well, one of the thrusters is now not working properly and sort of arcing across the hallway. This person's now racing off to this hallway to try and lock down the circuit.
Right, yeah.
And it's just trying to come up with, well, why are you taking strain, or why is all this stuff happening?
Yeah.
And that's where the story just sort of emerges from it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the end of the beginner adventure. You have this little combat on your ship that you just stole. And by the time my players got through it, they barely beat, I think it was TIE fighters they were fighting. They barely beat them. And their ship was so beat up by then. And then there's a free adventure you can get from the website that's like a continuation of that. Yep. That starts with the ship's all screwed up and there's all these crazy things on board that you got to figure out. And I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's that's one of the nice parts of the beginner adventure is they do put out a free supplement to it. And actually, the supplement's really good for ripping apart and figuring out from a GM standpoint, how are they putting together these encounters?
Okay.
And the writers and developers behind it put a huge amount of thought into it. And they put very effective thought into it. In the Edge of the Empire beginner box, you've got them adrift in a ship at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then they land on this planet, which is the closest thing that they can get to, and have to do something there. And then after that, they have to go into this social situation, which combat cannot happen in. You cannot pull a blaster here, otherwise the characters will die. And it's how do you set up a social situation from it?
Yeah, very cool.
And like, they're free resources that are pretty nice to pick apart and figure out, well, this is what they were thinking of. So yeah, it's a pretty cool thing.
Well, Ben, I know you're a fan of the game. I'm a fan of the game. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it and explaining it all to us. I really appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Would you like to share where people can find your podcast and website and all that good stuff?
The podcast itself can be found at madadventurers.com, as we're one of now 5 podcasts that get posted up there on a weekly basis.
Okay.
We go up on Sunday nights, Monday mornings, depending on your time zone. And we are on iTunes. We've got a show Twitter account, The Hydean Way, and my own Twitter account, which is how I'm generally keeping contact with people, is Deuterium Ice. And those are the main places to find us. We are currently looking at a few other places to start showing up.
Okay.
Just to make it easier for people to find us. But primarily, we're based off of madadventures.com.
Awesome. If you get any other places, let me know and I'll pass it along, because I'm a big fan of the game. I'm a big fan of your guys' podcast.
Oh, thank you. And for the podcast, we do focus in on the system, or at least within the first 5 minutes, we're taking a look at, this may be our topic, but we're seeing how we can apply it to Star Wars and we're caring about the stories because the system is about telling a story in Star Wars. Yes, there are combat mechanics, social interaction mechanics, and all the other fun mechanics out there, but it's about telling a good story. And I was really lucky to see the designer of the system, Jay Little, run a game.
And oh, nice.
This is a guy who, he will take, one, the background section from creating characters.
Uh-huh.
With that, he'll be able to run an entire session without a book in front of him.
Wow.
It's that easy. Once you get the base idea behind this is what difficulty should be, you can do that.
Nice.
Like, I've lucked into, through experience, I've been able to do something that's probably a pale shadow of that. Like, it's a fun system, and it's so free-flowing.
Yeah, that's what I like. I like systems where you can kind of just run with it, and you don't have to have a huge stack of books beside you.
Yeah, like, I will say that the Fantasy Flight Adversary decks have been wonderful. Like, they're definitely on my GM's must-buy list.
Oh, cool.
And they're good for any system, like any of the three systems.
Cool.
They just have stats, equipment block of what the equipment does, and any talents with a description of what the talents are, and flavor if they've got room for it. And they're sturdy, sturdy cards. They're almost sturdy enough to leave lying about with a 5-year-old kicking around.
I will definitely have to check those out. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Ben. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I really had fun talking with you about Star Wars.
Thank you so much for having me. This has just been great talking with you. I love talking about the system and going over it. It's a fun system.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to get some more experience playing it and running it. So maybe after I've done so, maybe you can come back and I can have more intelligent questions for you.
Well, I'd love to do it.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Quite welcome. Yeah, this has been really fun.
All right, well, that is going to wrap up episode 27 of Game Master's Journey. I want to thank Ben again so much for joining me on the show. I really appreciate it. And if you would like to check out his podcast, Tales from the Hydean Way, you can find that at madadventurers.com. You can also find it on iTunes. And I will have links to his podcast website and his podcast on iTunes in my show notes for this episode, episode 27, at starwalkerstudios.com. You can follow Ben on Twitter at The Hydean Way for the podcast Twitter feed, and you can follow his personal Twitter at Deuterium Ice. And again, I'll have those in the show notes as well. If you'd like to reach me, a great way to do so is shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Again, please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes for this episode, find links to Ben's information and his podcast and my information. You can find a link to our Google Plus community, and I'm also putting links for some of the Star Wars RPG products in the show notes. Last episode, episode 26, I linked to the core books and the beginner boxes for Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion, as well as to the dice. And this week I will link to the adversary decks that Ben talked about there at the very end of the interview, which are really cool. I'm actually planning on getting those myself. I actually didn't even know about them until he told me about them, and then I looked into them and they look super cool. Those are Amazon affiliate links, so if you click on one of those and go buy that or anything else on Amazon, you will help support the show, which I greatly appreciate. Another great way that you can support the show is take a test drive of Audible books courtesy of Game Master's Journey. You can go to audibletrial.com/gamemaster and start your 30-day free trial, and you'll get one free book as part of that. Again, I'm recommending The Eye of the World by Robert Jordan if you want to get into a good fantasy series. Definitely my favorite fantasy series of all time. Really great stuff, and you can get that on Audible. You can also get pretty much anything else that you want on Audible. I've yet to look for a book and they don't have it. So it's a really great way to read books, quote unquote read. If you're busy like me, you can listen to a book while you're jogging or in the car or on the bus or on the subway or on a plane going somewhere, whatever. So it's a nice way to keep up on your reading if you don't have time to actually read a book. And some people just prefer to be read to. Well, again, I want to thank you so much for downloading and listening to Game Master's Journey. I will be back next week with episode 28. In the meantime, I hope that you enjoy some role-playing of your own, whether as a Game Master or a player. Game on!
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.